Hey, y'all out there, this is Bo Billingsley, the voice of Jet Black and the Fourth Raikage. You're listening to The Night Nerd. Stay tuned, because all kinds of good things will be happening.
Welcome to the Night Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Lance. It's Thursday, so we're going to talk a little bit of history. All week, we've been celebrating the Sega Genesis Collection that recently came out on Xbox One, Switch, and PlayStation. There's a whole lot of great games on it. You know, we hit up some of our favorite ones earlier in the week, and it's a lot of fun. It and Street Fighter. This is just the week for classic games, but before we do go any further, I do want to give another shout-out, a big thank you to Mark from Meteors and Milk for being on the show the past couple of days and telling us more about Sonic and everything like that. But today, we're going to look at a really, really brief history of Sega. There's a lot to unpack with it. It's a phenomenal company. As much as I love Xbox, like, I'm still a Sega person first and foremost. And I think that's why I'm an Xbox person. But They started back in 1940, and they've done a lot, and so yeah, we're just going to look at a few little highlights on their things. They actually started back in 1940. There were three American businessmen over in Honolulu who formed a company called Standard Games that helped get coin-operated machines to military bases, because, you know, before World War II, or at the start of World War II, there was a big influx of military personnel over in that area, and so they were like, hey, this is something to let them do in their leisure time, fun games and stuff, to the point where they changed their name to Service Games, and that because it was for people in the service. But then 1951 rolls around and the government outlaws slot machines, so they in U.S. territories, it was a whole big deal that we're still only recently, like, fixing and stuff. But so they pack up and they move over to Tokyo and find some new distributors there and try and do some stuff. And meanwhile, during all this time, there's a guy named David Rosen, who is an officer in the Air Force, and he's in Japan, and he starts doing photo booths and little things like that, different arcades and stuff. And eventually they would kind of join forces to create Sega Enterprises, which Service Games is, you know, S-E-G-A, Sega. So technically, when you look at Sega Games, it's Service Games Games, which I think is interesting. But they would go on, you know, keep doing their thing and do really well in it over in the Gulf and in Japan and everything. Just keep making keep bringing in all these great arcades. Then you had the big arcade boom of the late 70s, where you get stuff like Head-On, Monaco GP, Space Fury, and Sega, as always, was on the edge. They were on the cutting edge of all of this. They had the first game with the isometric graphics in Zaxxon, the first stereoscopic 3D game with Sub-Rock 3D, and the first Laserdisc game with Astron Belt. The United States saw Dragon's Lair come out first, but Astron Belt was the first one made. And so they're going through all this, and this is when you get the early consoles, the Atari, ColecoVision, and things like that. And so Sega's like, okay, we'll port our games over to these consoles for you. You know, they're popular. And they were so good at where they were doing stuff for Midway, like Tapper that Midway made. They ported over for them. And everything's looking pretty good. But then we had the infamous 1983 video game crash. And that hit, well, I mean, that hit everybody pretty hard there. But Sega kind of took a step back and they're like, you know, why don't we make our own console? Let's, instead of making games for other people, and this is kind of ironic because 30 some odd years later they'll switch, but they're like, let's make this thing. And so they make this system called the SG-1000. And it was their first thing. And it was actually really successful. That a lot of people don't realize. It came out in 83. And then they had some upgrades from it, like the SG-1000 Mark II, the SG-3000, and the Sega Mark III. But its first one, you know, it really was one of the best-selling consoles at the time. And then the NES came out. And we all know what happened there, because NES is one of the, you know, best-selling, biggest, most awesome systems in history. And so, you know, Sega kept trucking along, they were doing really well, especially in other markets like Europe, Australia, Brazil, and New Zealand. They were selling almost as much as the NES and things. But they realized they needed to kind of do something. They needed to take their game up. And that's when you had the Sega Genesis came out in 89. And I remember when it came out, they had a really cool slogan. It was a bit petty and catty, but their slogan was, Genesis does what Nintendo don't. Because they were the first to be doing things, you know, with their Master System and the Genesis. But when the SNES launched, you know, they had to change their stuff. But it still, you know, that was kind of the birth of the console wars. And Sonic came out and just propelled them to unbelievable heights. At one point, Sega was like at 65%, over 60% of the North American market was Sega. So they were winning. And Sonic 2 sold over 6 million copies. It's one of the best-selling games of all time. It's just insane. And then, you know, we did the Game Gear and the Nomad and stuff, but we don't talk about those. And also to understand, you know, Sega's still making arcades to this day, they're still making arcades. Some of the best arcades out there, and they're always just really innovating there. Back in 92, they had their model series, which brought in Virtual Fighter and Virtual Racing, which really helped lay the groundwork for racing and fighting games that we know and love today. And then they would have the Sega CD and the 32X come out. 32X, I'll admit, was super gimmicky because the Sega Saturn was about to come out, so there really wasn't a need for it, but they did it anyway. And then you had the Sega Saturn come out, and it did not too great, especially over in Japan. Even though it had great games, like everybody loved the games, there just wasn't enough of them. It was kind of the biggest complaint. And so, again, at this point, Sega's realizing, okay, well, we need to change, we need to adapt, and they decided to open up a new label called Deepwater, where they went more with the violence and the sexual themes and the mature content that, you know, was with Mortal Kombat and stuff, and really just the culture of the time kind of developing that way. Yeah, like I said, this is the mid-90s. But they got big enough where they had their own channel with Time Warner. They had theme parks. They had Sega World arcades in the UK and Australia. Lots of great things. And then you get into 98, 99, where we saw the Dreamcast launch. The Dreamcast is, to this day, my all-time favorite home console. Like, I love it. And it did so much. You know, everyone talked about, oh, well, on paper this, on paper that. On paper and off paper, its technology was so far ahead of the N64 and the PlayStation. It was ridiculous. It had a modem, little attachment included into it, so you could do online multiplayer. It was the first Fantasy Star Online was the first console-based MMORPG. I remember we played games like pool, football, the 2K series, Domino, I mean, all sorts of different games online. And then you'd have the PlayStation 2 come out, which did better overseas and domestically here in the States, which is sad because the Dreamcast, again, was just making so many innovative launches. And actually, when the Dreamcast launched here in the States, it was one of the biggest console launches in history, that it had 500,000 consoles in the first week. Now that everybody's a gamer, you know, those numbers aren't really big, but back then that was huge. And with the Dreamcast, you know, you saw the first cel-shaded game with Jet Set Radio, Jet Grind Radio, Jet Set Radio Future, and depending where you're at, C-Man, which our good friend Wiggy, he and I can tell you some stories about that. That was one of the first games that really involved learning and communication with a microphone on home consoles. He would learn your birthdays, he would learn where you're from, he'd, you know, remind you of things. You had Samba de Amigo, which I still have. It was a rhythm game that used maracas. This is way before Guitar Hero or anything. Then you have Shenmue, which Shenmue 3 comes out pretty soon. This was one of the first, like, really big, grand scope, open world, detailed cities type things. And it was beautiful and has such a huge cult following. Like, Shenmue 2 came out on Xbox. 3 is rumored to be PlayStation exclusive, but my counterpoint to that is they're re-releasing Shenmue 1 and 2 on Xbox, so I don't know. But all in all, the Dreamcast was kind of not a failure, but didn't live up to expectations. And so, again, always, you know, being humble and knowing what to do, took a step back and was like, okay, now we're going to switch. We're going to put all of our focus into third-party development. And I think it's interesting, you know, because they're taking all these great games they have and sharing them on all consoles. You know, right now, you can argue console war and things. I've read a lot of interesting things lately about whether or not the console war is real. But ultimately, you know, it boils down to exclusives. And so, like, my PlayStation friend, not friends, because there's only, like, one of them, it's like, oh my gosh, God of War is so amazing and so great. And I'm over here like, oh yeah, well, Halo is amazing. And they're like, well, Last of Us. And okay, well, we have Quantum Break. All, you know, and it's just back and forth, back and forth. And Sega was like, hey, we're going to share our games with everybody. And that's how we've gotten, like, Mario and Sonic at the Olympics. He's shown up in Smash Bros. We've seen Virtua Fighter characters show up everywhere. We've seen Virtua Fighter on all the consoles. You know, it's just been really, really great. And the fact that they keep remarketing themselves, I mean, now the push into mobile gaming and digital gaming and stuff like that, you know, having the Sega Classics collection on your phone that you can have is just really great and wonderful. And that's why I love Sega. You know, they're always reinventing themselves, always doing what needs to be done. And so, kudos to you, Sega. Thanks. You're the best. Yeah, that's a super short Cliff Notes version of the history of Sega. If you want to know more about it, by all means, please hit us up. You can hit us up below here on SoundCloud or on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Just look for The Night Nerd. I will gladly talk Sega. Or if you want a long message, if you want to email me, nightnerd@thenightnerd.com. I'll respond to all of those. Like I said, I will never shy away from video game talk, especially if it's about Sega, just because I love it so, so much. But that's going to be it for me today. Make sure you are clicking that little subscribe button to check out all the shows, not just me here at the Night Nerd, but Blah Blah Comics, Blah Blah Curse Words, and DC Animated Adventures. Lots of good things going on there. But yeah, I'm Lance. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you next time.